Ah, Mikey. Botsy Booze. Say, you know what TV's Frank and I have been getting into lately? Voodoo. Yes. It's a safe, economical way to inflict evil on the world.
And it's fun, too.
Don't let them bury me. I'm not dead.
Hello, everybody. It's episode 51 of 13 O'Clock.
Man, 51.
I know, right?
What was it today? What's the show?
Today, we're talking about zombies. Voodoo. Real okay. Zombies.
Okay, so the historical stuff, like all the Haitian zombies.
Because okay. I always thought that, like, I love modern zombie stuff, too, but I always kind of like the old school folkloric zombies.
Okay.
So I kind of wanted to do a show about that. But before we get to that, let's do our regular announcements.
Okay, yeah, announcements. Go ahead.
Okay, so since you guys know, the audio podcast has been moved. You can still get it on WordPress at 13 O'Clock Podcast. And you can also, it should be available on iTunes now. And I'll put the link in the description because I just recently got the new link to where it is. So you should be able to download it from there and it should be fine. Or like I said, if you go to archive.org, we have a page on there called 13 O'Clock Podcast. And you can just download the audio directly from there if you want. And, you know, like I said, the YouTube show is exactly the same. It's not moving anywhere. So it's just the audio podcast that has been moved. But, you know, you guys will be able to find it. It's not that hard to find. So let's see. What else?
You did a show recently, didn't you?
Yes. Yesterday, I recorded a show with a podcast called See You on the Other Side. And that actually will probably be out today.
Yeah, what was it about?
Well, we talked about Poltergeist mostly, but I talked a little bit about my horror fiction, just talked about just general paranormal stuff and horror stuff. It was a fun show.
Okay.
It was cool. A really fun show to do, so make sure to check that out. And what else? Spooky Empire will be coming up at the end of October. It is the last weekend in October before Halloween. It's the 27th, 28th, and 29th, and we will be there.
Orlando.
Yeah. In Orlando. I think it's at the Orange County Convention Center. That's usually where it is. It will be on several of the panels, including Sick and Twisted and a bunch of the other ones over the weekend. We'll be there all 3 days, Friday night, Saturday, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday. Yeah. And we'll be there with all our books and, you know, we'll be there to sign stuff and have swag and all kind of neat stuff like that. So if you're in the Orlando area the weekend before Halloween, then make sure to drop by and say hello to us.
Yeah.
We would like that very much.
Yep. Don't forget 13 O'Clock in Minutes. Please subscribe to that one. That's our little list channel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going good.
Yeah. And hopefully I'll be able to put up another one this week sometime. We'll see how that goes. Maybe the end of this week I can get another one put up.
We also picked up another patron. It was a big patron, too.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like top tier.
Yeah.
Do you remember her name?
Lindsay.
Lindsay, okay.
So thank you very much.
Thanks,
Lindsay.
Yeah.
Yay, hooray.
We'll be sending you some cool merch soon.
Yeah. Yeah, for those in the $10 and up tier, we're going to do a Google Hangout. Probably be the last weekend of August.
Yeah.
And I'll get with the people that are in those tiers, and we'll figure out the best time to do it.
Yeah, so we'll get to hang out.
Yeah, it'll be awesome.
All right.
And let's see, other than that, just wanted to plug my blog again, goddessofhellfire.com. I've been writing some new horror reviews and stuff like that on there. If you're into horror movies and stuff, you can go read all of that. And
what's funny is that Goddess of Hellfire has its own following, actually.
It does,
A following of its own.
Well, right. Like I said, it's more, I mean, I post stuff about the podcast on there and I post some paranormal stuff and, you know, just stuff about my writing in general. Yeah. But, you know, I think the anchor of it is really all the horror movie reviews and I do other things too. Just, you know, horror stuff in general, like my favorite, like what I think are the scariest horror scenes and movies and why they're scary and stuff like that. So, you know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff on there too. So, you know, if you're into that, go check it out. I thought this is good too, because this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about Haitian zombies is because now we love modern zombies. I love The Walking Dead. Okay. I'm a big fan. I love George Romero's movies.
Yeah.
And we've actually seen some pretty decent zombie movies recently. What was that? It was Korean, right?
Yeah, the Korean zombie movie. What was that called?
Train to Busan.
Train to Busan, yeah.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it.
Yeah,
it's
really
good. Yeah, basically zombies on a train. Yeah. But it was actually really cleverly done. The characterization was really good. It's
the Koreans got it.
I actually was afraid for the characters. I was like, oh my god. You know, I was like wigging out about it.
They took a lot of the best elements from the Walking Dead series and put it in a standalone movie.
Yeah. It's
pretty good. The zombies were not really the Walking Dead style zombies. They were more like that, the plague victim. They were, you know, fast.
They were fast, yeah.
Fast zombies. But still, it was cool. Really
cool. It was a really good movie. I highly recommend it. It's probably one of the best zombie movies I've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and it's in Korean.
Yeah. But it's on Netflix. I think it still is. So I like that stuff. I'm not shitting on that. But, you know, the modern perception of the zombie as a reanimated corpse that eats people, I mean, that mostly stems from Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, that's kind of the first. They were ghouls, really.
They were never called zombies.
They didn't call them zombies in that movie. They called them ghouls.
Yeah. Romero never saw them as a zombie.
Which is technically what that is.
He just
a reanimated corpse that eats people. That's a ghoul, right?
It's a ghoul.
Or it's somebody that eats corpses.
Yeah.
Like a ghoul. Living person. Yeah. So this is what I thought was really interesting that, and this, I wanted to plug a couple of my short stories because I've written two zombie short stories. Now, the thing about me, if you haven't read any of my fiction, is that I don't like to write about kind of your standard monsters, werewolves, vampires and stuff. I have, but if I do it, then I always want to put some kind of spin on it or go back to the old school type of thing. You know what I mean? So the only two zombie stories I ever wrote, one of them, it's called Understanding the Reanimated, and it was in my collection Associated Villainies, which came out in 2011. And I posited in that story that Romero zombies were real, and also that Haitian zombies were real. And the main character was like an anthropologist or like a researcher who was trying to discover why zombies had gone from these sugar plantation slaves to flesh-eating ghouls.
No.
Like I said, so positing that both things were real and wondering why that change took place. And he was studying why that change took place. And the other zombie story I wrote, which was called The Schism, and it was from Hopeful Monsters, and that came out in 2009. And that one was about a religious cult in the United States of like younger people and stuff like that, who got so off on the idea of the Haitian zombie thing and like taking the zombie powder and coming back to life, that they were almost kind of like had built a cult around this sort of resurrection, you know, this constant rebirth and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I've always been kind of more interested in the old school type zombies. So that's why I wanted to do this show about this. Now, most of you, I would think, if you're into horror, have probably seen the movie The Serpent and the Rainbow. And that came out in 88, I want to say. Bill Pullman was in it. And it's kind of like a polarizing movie. Like a lot
of
people.
I think it was before that.
It might have been.
Because I was in high school, I think, when I saw it.
Yeah, the book came out in 84 or 85.
I graduated in 87.
So yeah, it might have been like.
I think it was.
It might have been like 80s. Like
maybe
I've got the Wikipedia page open right here. 88, I was right.
88, okay.
Yeah, so you told you.
All right, so it's right after I got out of high school. But.
Yeah, I was still in high school then. It was very, very loosely based on the book by Wade Davis, which was a nonfiction book.
Right.
Now, Wade Davis is an anthropologist and an ethnobotanist, meaning that he studies how cultures and plants interact with medicinally or as drugs or whatever. Now, the reason that he came to write this book was because of a famous case that occurred in, well, it actually started in 1962, but they didn't find out about it until 1980. In 1980, there was a woman named Angelina Narcisse, and she was in her town in Haiti, and she was in the marketplace. And she sees this man walking toward her, and he looks kind of familiar and stuff like that. And he says, "I'm your brother, Clairvius."
Mm-hmm.
And she says, "Clairvius Narcisse died in 1962.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so she was kind of freaking out about it. But apparently, he knew a bunch of stuff about like his childhood, like he knew his childhood nickname that nobody knew but them, and he knew all this other stuff. So they eventually did discover that this was indeed a man who had supposedly died in 1962.
Hmm.
What ended up happening, 1962, Clairvius Narcisse, he checked himself into the Albert Schweitzer Hospital there in Haiti because he was having a fever and body aches and things like that. So he checks himself into the hospital. There are records of it. So he checks in. They give him an examination and stuff like that. And he dies. Two doctors signed the death certificate. Both of them had been trained in America, so it wasn't kind of like,
I know people will say it's like, oh, it's some witch doctor or whatever.
Yeah. No, these were both American trained doctors, and they both declared him dead. The day after that, he was buried. Now, when they're talking to Clairvius now, he says, I was completely lucid the whole time. He's like, I heard them pronounce me dead. I felt them pull the sheet up over my face. I felt them put me in the ground, and there was nothing I could do about it. He's like, I was paralyzed.
Wow.
So he could still see everything. He could still hear everything.
Man, when I was a kid, I had these morbid fears of being buried alive. Could you imagine what that'd be like, being buried alive?
That is a very common fear.
Yeah.
And honestly, I can't remember who wrote it at the moment, but there was a book. I have it somewhere. I think it's up in the attic, but it's called Buried Alive. Yeah. And it's kind of a history of people's fears about it and like all the stuff they used to build, like all that shit, like where they had like bells and stuff coming
bells
out of the
tubes
earth.
You could
and
yell.
Tubes that you could yell out there just in case.
Now, they buried him alive. How is it he didn't suffocate?
Because the day after he was buried, the Bokor, the sorcerer, he comes back and digs the guy up.
But there wasn't a day's worth of air in the coffin, was there?
Well, see, I don't think they don't bury them very deep. It's not like here where they bury them and there's like a layer of cement or it's like, I don't think they bury them very deep and the boxes are just kind of...
So there's a way to get enough oxygen?
I would imagine.
Either that or your metabolism is slowed down to the point to where you're not breathing
very
much.
It may be. But usually...
You can suffer all kinds of brain damage.
Some of them do.
All right.
It does happen because of oxygen deprivation.
Right.
But yeah, so he said that the next day, a guy came and dug him up, and then he was enslaved on a sugar plantation for 2 years, after which... The Bokor died, and he escaped. Now, you might be asking, well, why didn't he return to his family for 16 years?
Right.
The reason, according to him, is that... Now, you might feel bad for Clairvius Narcisse. I mean, this is a horrible, horrible thing to happen. But evidently, he believed that it was his brother that engineered him getting poisoned and enslaved.
Okay.
So he was waiting for his brother to die before he came back.
So he thought his brother put the sorcerer up to it.
Yeah. Okay. They don't know, like, I don't know if there's any proof of that exactly, but that's what he believed. So he said, well, I waited for my brother to die before I came back to contact the rest of my family because I thought he was responsible for it.
All right.
I don't know what he was doing for those ensuing 16 years. He was just wandering around. So... Because, I mean, okay, for a long time, there had been these kind of, you know, all this folklore and urban legends and stuff like that about zombies in Haiti. It's a very common urban legend there. But until Clairvius Narcisse came along and they were actually able to prove that, yes, this was the man that died in 1962 and here he is alive again. It's the same dude. People in the United States started to get interested in the case. Now, one of the people that got interested in the case... was a doctor named Nathan Klein. And at the time, he had a graduate student named Wade Davis, who was studying anthropology and ethnobotany. Now, Nathan Klein, he was like, okay, now if this zombie thing is real, then it has to be engendered through some kind of drug.
Right.
And it's like, and we could figure out what this compound is. Maybe we could use it like as an anesthetic or something like that. We could use it for medicinal purposes because they didn't know what was in it.
Mm-hmm. Zombie powder.
Yeah. So they basically were like, well, it has to be something like that. So he sent Wade Davis down to Haiti to study and try and figure out what this was. Now, this was the early 80s. So Wade Davis went down there. He was eventually able to obtain 8 different samples from 4 different areas of this zombie powder. Now, none of them had the exact same ingredients.
She's so good, she doesn't follow any recipes. A pinch here, a pinch there, he's a zombie, who cares?
But most of them had real similar ingredients. They said almost 7 out of 8 of them had dried pufferfish.
Yeah.
Which, of course, contains to trototoxin, which is causes paralysis.
Right.
They all contained ground human bones.
Hmm.
Usually, one preparation he saw prepared, he said that the guy crushed a baby skull and put it in there.
All right.
Several of them also had the stuff off like a marine toad.
Right.
Which was some kind of weird, gross substance. Not poisonous exactly, but, right. you know. And most of them also had either ground glass or some kind of like irritating plant, like itching pea or something like that.
I wonder why.
Because this is why. Most of them had ground glass or tarantula hairs or things like that.
Oh, get it in your blood system.
Yeah, because if they blew it on you or got it on your skin, it would make you scratch.
Right.
Thereby having open wounds and it would get into your bloodstream.
Right.
So he brings these samples back. And he, like I said, he wrote the book, The Serpent and the Rainbow, about his experiences there. He actually wrote another book, too, in 1988 that was kind of about the same thing. But so he brought it back. They put the preparations on some shaved rats and things like that, and it caused the rats to get paralyzed for a little while, but then they woke up and they were all right, like they recovered. Now, what he didn't obtain a sample of, and I don't think anyone, as far as I know, I don't think anyone has obtained a sample, but this is what they feel like is probably happening. Now, the zombie powder is not used to keep the people enslaved, you know. That's only used for the death and resurrection portion.
Okay.
To keep the people enslaved, they think that there's another compound. They take sweet potatoes, they make a paste out of it, and then they mix in Datura, which is a plant which has atropine and scopolamine in it.
Ah, so
and if you, back. Yeah, and if you remember, we did a show about that, about that, what's it called? The devil's breath. Or whatever. It's like, you know, it's like the angel's trumpet is also called that kind of plant. That has the same kind of thing. And that causes, you know, amnesia, pliability, things of that nature. And it's also thought that, you know, the Bokors that have these zombies on their plantations, working on their plantations, that they also feed, they kind of feed them the Datura all the time, which kind of makes them lose their memory and lose their identity and things like that. But they also feed them a diet with no salt in it, which makes them weak and kind of, you know, not, which is actually pretty clever because that does happen if you don't, because you need salt, you need a lot of salt and you brought it to maintain your muscles and your brain function and stuff like that. So if they feed you a low salt diet, it weakens you and makes you like less likely to run off. Now, the interesting thing too, and I think I'm not sure how widespread this perception is. I feel like people would be like, well, isn't it kind of a lot of trouble to make zombies just to like work on your plantation?
Yeah,
on your plantation, you know what I mean? Because especially because there's a lot of unemployment in Haiti. It's like, you know, it should be easy to like find people to work on your sugar plantation. Well, it's because they don't make zombies as slaves.
Okay.
Really. Not from an economic standpoint.
All right.
They make zombies because it's a punishment.
I got you.
So it's kind of a way of keeping people in line and keeping people like, you know, people that break society's rules and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're seen as, this is seen as like the ultimate punishment.
Right.
Because.
So if somebody's messing with you, you can hire a Bokor to go turn them into a zombie.
Right. Because you have to imagine, I mean, Haiti, which was occupied by the French, well, you know, they had slaves to work on the sugar plantations. Yeah. When the Haitian Revolution came in 1804 and the French were driven out, you know, slavery was abolished and things like that, but the memory of it was still very fresh.
Right.
After the Haitian Revolution, they had had beliefs in zombies before because obviously the slaves had been brought over from West Africa and they had a similar type of belief system there and they brought that with them. So they'd always had that legend about zombies. But after the Haitian Revolution, the zombie thing kind of exploded because the memory of slavery was so fresh. And they thought, well, that would be worse than death, you know, being dead and then coming back and being enslaved, because they did believe that the Bokors had the power to
bring the dead back to life
and enslave you. And you would just be at their beck and call forever.
Yeah. So it was like a scary idea.
Yeah. So that's why, and I think that's why like a lot of the Bokors got away, because most of the regular people didn't know that they just engendered that through a drug.
Right. They thought it was magic.
Yeah, they thought it was magic because
you know, science is magic.
Really? Yeah.
Magic is just science. Science is just magic that works.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why, like I said, that's why Clavius Narcisse, he thinks, was zombified, because apparently, according to some of his family members, he wasn't really the nicest guy.
Right, yeah.
I guess he had sort of burned a lot of bridges with his family members. He was supposed to share part of his land with his brother,
mm-hmm.
and his brother had a family to support, and evidently, he wanted to keep all the land for himself.
Right.
And in Haiti, I mean, where agriculture is like a huge part of their economy, they take land rights pretty seriously.
Yeah, so is vengeance.
Yeah. So the
vengeance
fact
among that, family.
Yeah, members. So the fact that Clavius Narcisse, and like I said, he kind of seemed like a scumbag in other ways. Like, he right. went around knocking up women and not supporting the children and things like that. So he wasn't super well-liked. So it kind of came to pass that his brother got pissed off at him, hired a Bokor
right.
to poison him and then bring him back from the dead, quote unquote. And that's how that went. Actually, tell you what, let's take a break right now and we'll just throw a couple little short commercials in there.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about
zombies. All right.
Be back in just a minute.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena by Jenny Ashford. Author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to The Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
Hey, 13 o'clock fans. Love the show but don't have an hour to spare? Check out our new list channel, 13 O'Clock in Minutes. All the fun, creepy topics of the main podcast, but in easy-to-swallow, bite-sized pieces. Links in the description. More videos to come soon.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale House Poltergeist, Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist,
the Associated Hopeful Monsters,
Red Menace,
the Five Poisons,
Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Okay, so
did the zombie powder actually work?
See, there's kind of a lot of controversy about this. Now, you have to think, if the zombie phenomena is real, if people are actually getting buried and being brought back and being enslaved. And like I said, Clavius Narcisse was not the only person that has claimed this.
All right.
Many, many, many other people in Haiti have claimed that this has happened to them. His was just the most documented case because they had records of his death and they had all these, you know, they had all these other things. And he knew a lot about his childhood and stuff like that, which a faker wouldn't have known.
But there are some Western people that don't believe this.
Yeah, well, right. There was some controversy arose because the samples that Wade Davis brought back,
mm-hmm.
like I said, apparently they did test some of them on rats, and it mm-hmm. did make the rats, you know, go into paralysis, and then they came back and recovered and stuff like that. However, when other labs tried to test the powder, they said that most of them had little to no trace of tetrodotoxin in them. Now, Wade Davis says, well, maybe that might have been because, one, all the preparations of the formula were different because he got them from different sorcerers and they all had their own little recipes or whatever. He's like, also, the solution that you put them in to test them might have destroyed it.
Maybe it's got a real short half-life. Maybe it gets weak quickly or something.
Yeah, or something like that. That's kind of what he was arguing.
Right.
Since it couldn't really be replicated, you know, as far as I know, so some people thought that maybe it was bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe every single case of people coming back and saying, hey, I got zombified, was just you know, people mistaken identity or, you know, whatever. But I don't know. It does seem like it's so widespread there, and it's so, there are so many people claiming that this happened to them, and they say the same things. They say, I could hear and feel everything that was going on when I got pronounced dead and when I got buried and things like that. So it would seem that if those things did happen the way they were described, then it would have to be something like that. Because that drug from the pufferfish, it does have that effect.
All right.
I mean, like I said, it's just like the fugu fish in Japan that, like, right, you know, people eat and they have to prepare it a certain way. Otherwise, it makes you paralyzed and it'll kill you.
So why were some people skeptical?
Well,
maybe they just hating on it. Were they just hating on it?
Well, I'm not really sure. Well, you know, it's science. You have to be skeptical. Okay. Especially if it's something so seemingly fantastic,
right,
as zombies. But like I said, Wade Davis was not claiming that the Bokors were bringing people back from the dead.
No, it just looked like it.
Yeah, he was just saying that
a magic trick.
Yeah, that they were doing like a faking death that was good enough to fool doctors. Yeah. And then bringing the guy back and feeding them a drug that made them pliant. Okay. That's basically what he was saying, right, which is not a crazy thing because there are drugs that do that type of shit. So the thing is, okay, so later on, Wade Davis agreed to sell the book to Hollywood. You know, he knew it was going to be a horror movie.
Okay.
But, you know,
this ended up being Serpent in the Rainbow?
Yeah. Well, that was the name of the book.
Okay.
Well, the thing...
Actually, I didn't like the movie. I didn't remember, like... from what I remembered, I thought...
I liked it, but...
thought it was pretty corny.
I haven't seen it for a long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time either.
I liked it at the time. Now...
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Pretty much the only... They changed everyone's names. Mm-hmm. But the main character that was in it, that was played by Bill Pullman, he was an anthropologist and an ethnobiologist, but he wasn't named Wade Davis. He was named something else. He was named Alan something. And he goes down to Haiti to get the zombie powder and stuff like that. But I feel like... I'm not really sure, and like I said, I haven't seen it in a while. I'm not really sure if the movie posits that there really is like some supernatural shit going on, or if Bill Pullman's character just is like suffering under the effects of these drugs.
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
Because in the movie, he gets drugged by like the Bokor and stuff and gets buried alive and stuff like that. And there's that very famous scene where he's like, don't bury me, I'm not dead and stuff like that. Now, Wade Davis obviously did not try any of the zombie powder himself, wisely. And so that part is not true. And there was also a bunch of stuff about, I think like the Bokor like was haunting his dreams and like beheaded somebody and shit like that.
On the silver screen, zombies traditionally were kind of portrayed like this up until George Romero's movie.
George Romero, yeah.
Because, really? Bela Lugosi had one called White Zombie. And
yeah.
And it involved powders and
There were like some short silent films that were kind of about zombies. I think the first one was in 1919.
So how did they know back then? I guess the rumors of zombie powder had made it into the United States.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody
had proof.
Yeah.
Nobody had proof.
Well, yeah, that's kind of how people got interested in it at the time. But there was U.S. military that were stationed in Haiti kind of in the early 20th century.
And they knew about it.
And they sent back, well, a lot of their shit was exaggerated.
Right.
Like in the early 20th century, there was like a really lot of kind of pulp novels that were based off like all these scary, you know, zombie witch doctors, and they had all these preparations, and they could hypnotize people to do their bidding and all this other kind of stuff. So, like I said, it was exaggerated, but that was where the American perception came from.
Okay.
Like I said, 1919, I think, was the first short silent film that was based on that type of thing. White Zombie with Bela Lugosi was actually the first full-length zombie movie. The best thing about White Zombie is that Bela Lugosi's character is named Murder Legendre. I'm like, that is awesome. I wish that was my fucking name. But yeah, so Bela Lugosi plays basically a Bokor who kind of uses his little magic powers to like hypnotize. And then there was another one called I Walked with a Zombie. That came out in 1943, I think. And that was Jacques Tourneur and Val Lewton, who also made Cat People, which is a really fucking awesome
I just think
movie.
It's weird that Night of the Living Dead has become the definitive zombie movie, when that really wasn't about zombies. It wasn't originally intended to be about zombies. When I see Night of the Living Dead, it kind of reminds me of Last Man on Earth, which is more about vampires.
Yeah, those were kind of vampires, weren't they?
Yeah, you had Last Man on Earth that got spun into Omega Man.
Yeah.
Which got spun into I Am Legend.
Yeah, which was what the original book was
called.
Which
the original called, yeah.
Which, now, was, I can't remember.
It was kind of like a zombie movie, but it was
kind of.
It was about vampires. In the Heston movie, the vampires were kind of spun into mutants.
Yeah.
And then we were watching that new series last night, which kind of reminded me of
Van Helsing. Helsing. It was a sci-fi series. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like Last Man on Earth or Omega Man.
It kind of is, yeah. I didn't really realize it at the time because it's very similar to Walking Dead, too, because it's kind of like a few survivors.
Well, it's definitely their take on. They needed a Walking Dead, so that's what they did.
Yeah.
They did Van
Helsing.
They just
did vampires.
And it's kind of like Last Man on Earth, but it's not about one man, it's about a group.
Yeah, it's about a group. So in that sense, it's more like, yeah. And actually, I don't know if I'd recommend it. It's okay. Like, we just kind of...
Oh, it's not bad.
Yeah, we just kind of came across it. Yeah. I liked the central conceit, even though... I mean, it posits that there have always been these vampires, but that they were able to take over the Earth because there was like a huge... it was like a huge volcanic eruption or something like that. And so it made the skies go dark. So the vampires could come out in the day. They didn't have to like creep around in the shadows and at night all the time. So it's kind of similar to like 30 Days of Night, where the vampires go up to the Arctic Circle where it's like dark for 6 months and stuff like that, which I thought was a really good idea. And then there's kind of a whole thing about, aren't there like dumb ones and smart ones? Because some of them can like talk. They're just like people. Yeah.
Well, so like the Omega Man.
Of them are like feral.
Out of them all, I'd take Omega Man. I love that movie.
That was a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
I kind of liked the Last Man on Earth, though. The Vincent Price one.
It was good, too, but I think Omega Man beat it.
I did not like the Will Smith one. I am Legend. Not at all.
No. Terrible.
It seems to me, and like I said, I haven't read the Richard Matheson novel in a long time, but I perceived that the Vincent Price one was closest to the book.
Yeah. Although, it's hard to choose between Omega Man and Night of the Living Dead. There's similar premise, but very different. Man, I think I'd still take Omega Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would. Matthias and the cult living down
heathen.
Inside the...
I'm just kidding.
I like
but that. But I'm kind of... Well, this is like I said, and this is why I kind of ended up writing a story about it. And I don't know if writing the story really kind of gave me any new insight into it, but why? Why did that happen? Like, why did the zombie... mythos that came from Haiti. Mm. How did that morph into what it is now?
Like, well, Night of the Living Dead, that broke the ground with the genre.
Well, yeah, because
but
it seems like...
But they were ghouls. And, yeah. Somebody somewhere along the line called those zombies.
Yeah.
It's never mentioned in any of the movie.
No, he doesn't mention
it's
it.
It's never mentioned.
And they only really briefly mentioned how it happened. It was just space radiation that brought them back.
Well, they never definitively say. They say, does this space radiation
happen? They're like, well, that could be it.
Maybe,
Yeah. Which, you know, I don't know. I guess that's a good thing. But it just seems weird that it's become so...
Now, as the Night of the Living Dead series unfolded, became Day of the Dead and Dawn of the Dead, I don't remember if they ended up calling them zombies in any of those. Did they?
This is another weird thing. And The Walking Dead is like the worst culprit for this. It seems like, I mean, I haven't seen every zombie movie or zombie show ever, you know, ever made.
They don't call them zombies.
No. Even though in real life, that's immediately what you would call them.
Zombies are the only thing that don't exist in the Walking Dead universe.
And that's very weird to me.
That word doesn't seem to exist.
Yeah, that's very weird to me because it, in a way, it kind of chips away at the realism because you know that if something like that happened in real life, everybody would call them that.
Yeah.
In fact, some of the, you know, quote unquote zombie movies they've made lately, like, well, not lately, but in the past 20 years or so, you know, like 28 days later, those got called zombies, even though technically they're not zombies because they're not dead people.
Okay.
They're just infected people.
Right.
So if you had to call them infected people and not zombies, then fine.
Yeah.
But Walking Dead, that was one of the things that always kind of weirded me out. But it's like, oh, we're calling it walkers or what is
biters.
That? Biters. That kind of thing. Who the fuck would call them that? Nobody. Everybody would call them zombies. Everybody on Earth would call them zombies.
They do call them the dead, though.
Yeah, which, you know, that's fine. You would call them that. But biters?
Yeah.
Who would call them that? Nobody. Nobody. And that, it takes it out of, like I said, I love The Walking Dead, but that takes me right out of the story because that's really not what would happen. That's not what would happen. And I feel like a lot of zombie movies have that, where it's like they won't call them that for some reason. Well, that was one thing that I kind of liked about that Van Helsing show we were watching last night, that they immediately did come out and say, well, it sounds dumb, but they're vampires.
They're vampires, right.
Because they are vampires.
Right.
They're dead people that came back and they drink people's blood. They're vampires.
Now, in the Price, in that Vincent Price movie, Last Man on Earth, a vampire was kind of like a zombie.
Yeah.
There was a big difference.
You have to think that. I mean, the two mythological creatures are very similar.
Well, the way a lot of some of the zombies were described is basically a zombie. And excuse me, many of the, a lot of times the way a vampire is described is a zombie, basically. Something and, that comes up out of the grave. It's nasty. It's got blood all over it.
And maybe that's kind of where the switch happened between the Haitians, because maybe it kind of got intermingled with the vampire thing, because initially vampires were kind of gross.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like ghouls also.
Yeah. I think in the Romero Night of the Living Dead, the ghouls actually were conceived of as primitive vampires.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Well, even now, I haven't read any of Anne Rice's stuff in a long time, but didn't she have
some kind of
feral vampires too that weren't all, you know, Lestat-y and rich and everything?
In the book Vampire Lestat, in the story of Lestat's genesis, when Lestat was a newly made vampire out in Europe, he tells the story where he finds a walking corpse and destroys it. They said it was a mindless walking corpse.
Yeah.
Now, you're led to believe that it was a vampire. It was a vampire, but it was very primitive.
A lot of the folklore about vampires that comes from like Eastern Europe and stuff like that, they weren't portrayed as like really suave.
No.
Or even particularly intelligent, maybe cunning. But they were almost kind of portrayed as...
They were animalistic.
Animalistic.
Yeah.
And in the original stories, they actually only went after their own family members. I don't think they just went after everybody. I think that, if I'm remembering it correctly, I think like the Eastern European legends, that's why you had to like put a stake through their heart and stuff like that, because they'd come back to their family home and try to eat everybody in there. Not so much just random people. I mean, even in Bram Stoker's original Dracula, you know, Dracula didn't look like Bela Lugosi. Nah. He looked like Nosferatu.
Right.
He looked like a rat. Like he was kind of yucky and gross.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is. Maybe there's just some kind of cross-pollination between the zombie thing and the vampire thing. Because they're both like people coming back from the dead and feasting on the living, whether drinking their blood or eating
their bones. They're all vampires.
And you can also say
that the mutants from Omega Man were also vampires. It was just a different way.
I always kind of perceived them as vampires.
They were albinos, psychopathic albinos that couldn't stand the light. Now, they didn't drink blood.
True.
And they don't think they didn't die. They were just normal human beings.
Were they immortal?
No. What I meant is they never died and were reborn.
Oh, right.
They're standing there, a normal person, and all of a sudden their eyes would go white, and then they were psychopaths. They'd attack you if you weren't one of them.
So, yeah. Oh, but okay. So, in that way, they were more like...
They were reborn as something else, but they never really died.
They didn't die
per se. No.
Right. Okay. So in that way, kind of like, gosh, we're getting into all these. Like, I love this though. I get into these like semantic discussions about what's a zombie, what's a vampire.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's kind of like.
I'm still going to say my favorite one is Omega Man. There's something about the Hest.
The Hest.
The Hest is almost like the Shat. The Hest comes at you, you know, it's gravitas.
Yeah.
Nothing like seeing Heston riding around in an abandoned L.A. in a Ford Mustang convertible with a Smith & Wesson submachine gun. And yeah, Smith & Wesson did make a submachine gun. The MK-760.
He knows all about it.
Yeah, I know all about it. Yeah, that's what he used. That's pretty cool. That's a cool clip.
That's pretty fun.
I want to see that movie again now.
Yeah, we should probably watch that again. Yeah. We watched Last Man on Earth just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I always kind of like that. But you gotta love Vincent Price, man. He's awesome. But yeah, I mean, something else I find interesting too is that I think particularly in the United States, we kind of have a perception of voodoo, the religion, being bad or evil. like, look at all the horror movies that were made about, like, the Believers and, like I said, Serpent in the Rainbow and stuff like that, where it's kind of like the entire religion is just broken down to they make zombies and they take people's souls and shit like that.
Because the United States has a heavy Protestant influence. If it's not Protestantism, it's the from the
devil. It's from the devil, yeah.
From the devil. Voodoo basically is basically Catholic.
Well, yeah. Basically, all is, like I said, it's West African, you know, sort of.
It's a reboot of Catholicism.
Yeah, animist religions mixed. Well, I mean, when the slaves were brought to Haiti and were forced to convert to Christianity, you know, they kind of intermingled. What's that? Syncretism, right? They call that. Kind of intermingled the two things.
Yeah. You know, and that became Santeria. It became Macumba. It became voodoo.
Yeah. Because the whole
different interpretations. Of
yeah,
the same
I mean
thing.
The whole you know
it's
belief.
Saints. It's the belief in saints.
Yeah, well, that's yeah, all, that's the same that's thing. All it the is. Whole belief system of voodoo right. is simply that they do have you know a main overarching god figure.
That's a pantheon.
But the overarching god figure does not. I mean, you can't talk to him directly.
No, but you got Jesus in there. So you've got Mary, and then you got all these little padres and saints, and then it goes down to little demon type. And nature spirits and...
Well, yeah, then you have the Loa, which are like spirits, and you can ask them for stuff. And all of the Loa have Catholic saint equivalents.
Yeah.
So, like, you can ask them for specific things. So when they have the rituals, like, to ask a particular Loa for something, like, each particular Loa has their little specialty, and they have their little color that's associated with them and their foods that's associated with them. So you just have your ritual. You wear the color scarf of the Loa that you want to talk to. You know, you give them cigarettes or whatever particular food is their thing and ask them for whatever. Yeah. So like I said, it's not a lot different than Catholicism, really. You're essentially just talking to
it's
the middlemen.
It's an integral part of it in Central and South America.
Oh, yeah.
There's no difference between Catholicism and Macumba. Macumba couldn't exist without Catholicism. It's just a continuation.
Yeah, that's all I said.
Okay, here's a good example. It's the expanded universe.
Yeah, you know that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, it's the expanded universe. You have, you know, Star Trek and then the expanded universe. You have Star Wars and then the expanded universe. You have Catholicism and then the expanded universe. They have to work. They work together.
Yeah.
They're part of the same thing.
And like I said,
it's just more of a folk version. The expanded version, of course, is fanfic.
Yeah.
It's fan fiction. So it's folk made.
Yeah.
That's what it
is. And like I said, I always found it a lot more, I mean, Catholicism, you know, I'm an atheist, so I don't really think any of the shit's real or anything like that. But I always thought, I mean, Catholicism, it's beautiful, all the saints and all the cathedrals. Yeah, it's very stylish.
Yeah, it's about style.
With all the candles and everything. Yeah. Love it. But, you know, so 'cause I'm a goth too, you know, I love that kind of shit. But there's always something I always kind of liked about the more voodoo themed interpretation of that, where it's a, like you said, it's like a folk interpretation of Catholicism where it's like all mixed together. And I always really liked that. It's that I never really perceived it as negative, even though a lot of people seem to. But you, like I said, you got to think that zombie thing, that's like a teeny little part of, and like I said, that's just punishing people.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it's not like a large part of their belief system.
That could also be seen as bringing justice. Doesn't necessarily.
Well, that's how they see it. I think they're like somebody does something assholey, and they're like, "Well, I'm going to turn your ass into a zombie, bitch, and see how you like that."
Right.
You know what I mean? That's all. That's all it is. It's sanctions.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's not really a huge part of their religion, you know, per se. It's just kind of like a little thing that sometimes they do when they're mad at you.
A lot of that stuff that it just involves an expanded universe priest, okay? He's not really from the Catholic Church, but he's working kind of like obliquely. He recognizes the power of the Catholic Church, but when poor people need something done, maybe they don't want to go to the big church. They want to go to their little folk church.
Yeah.
And have him do some stuff to help them. That's just all I'm saying. Well,
and they don't have any conflict about that.
No.
To them, it's all the same.
No, and it puts on a good show. You know, I've seen them in Brazil.
Yeah.
You know, candomblé shows, you know, macumba, which is candomblé, same thing.
Yeah, similar.
And there's going to be chicken sacrifices. But a lot of that has to do with the priest is going to eat that chicken.
Yeah.
Parts of it.
Yeah.
That's probably his payment. You know, he's not going to do that in front of everybody else, but, you know.
Yeah. Because that might look bad.
Yeah, they're giving packs of cigarettes to the spirits. Now, they do actually sacrifice that stuff. You'll find bowls, you know, like a flat bowl on the sidewalk with a pack of cigarettes in it and part of a chicken wing with feathers on it and some cards and a candle. And it'll stay there. It'll, you know, in a poor country, it'll just stay there. Nobody will touch
it. Well, no one's going to take that. Yeah. No, that's not for you.
No.
That's for the spirits.
Yeah. I never really thought it was a big deal.
You're going to be in big trouble if you take that.
I never really thought it was a big deal because I was growing up and, you know, as a teenager in a country that where that was just normal behavior. And really, I really didn't see the difference between that and Catholicism.
There isn't.
It's part of the same religion.
There isn't a difference. Well, like I said, look at Catholics that...
Although the Catholic Church would not say that that's the same religion.
Well, of course they wouldn't.
But, you know, like I said...
But it is the same.
Like I said, you know... a Star Wars purist is not going to accept the expanded universe. So that's not canon. It's not canon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the same shit, though.
Well, yeah. I never really saw that much of a difference because, like I said, Catholics, they do the same thing. They're making it by burning candles and incense and stuff. You're making an offering. You're asking for something in particular.
Right.
To a particular saint.
It's prayer and, you know.
Yeah, it's the same. You're just entreating spirits. It's not weird in that sense.
No.
It's just, there's no difference, I don't think.
No, the Mexicans are doing that, you know, with Santa Muerte, you know, with the drug dealers. You know what I mean? With this, they're giving offerings to basically kind of like a demonic force.
So they don't get caught.
So they don't get caught, you know, I guess.
Well, yeah, that's what, you know? Anything, and I feel like probably... And I don't know if this is true. Maybe somebody can point me to a study that shows it is true. But I feel like people that are involved in criminal activity are probably more superstitious than most.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have shown that superstition really kind of ramps up the more insecure your livelihood is, the more, you know what I mean? The more unsure you are of, you know, oh, I'm going to get caught or, oh, my crops are going to fail or something like that.
And criminal intellect is kind of graded on a curve. You know what I mean? The criminals are good, they're dumb.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And kind of the dumber you are, the more you're going to believe in crazy shit.
Yeah, that's pretty much true.
I'm going to go out and do something that's really high risk. I could probably get killed, so I need to believe in this imaginary thing that'll help me.
Yeah.
Help me get away with it.
Well, and like I said, the more they have shown that there are more superstitious beliefs in professions where there's a lot of uncertainty, like fishing or things like that. Like, you know, people that go out and they don't know how their livelihood's going to go that season or that year. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Professional gamblers.
Yeah, so it's an attempt to gain some control over your situation when you don't really have any. It just, like, makes you feel better. But in a self-fulfilling prophecy, sometimes it does make you do better because it makes you more confident.
Yeah.
So, you know, it works in that way.
We're getting a little bit off topic, though.
Well, that's okay. Well, actually, we're almost at the end of the show. So let's close out a little bit by...
We got the other topics coming up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Because this, we wanted to do this because we've had like a really, really lot of awesome topic requests lately.
Yeah, so tell them what's on the...
And we wanted to like let you guys know like when stuff was coming up. So you wouldn't think we'd like forgotten about everybody. So the topics we have coming up
in this order,
we're doing EVPs.
That's
that Mario Bocci, that radio, that guy,
that's
and EVPs 50, in general. 52, that's gonna be the next one. We're doing one on Elizabeth Bathory.
After that,
We're doing a revisit of Summer Wind. I think
that's right. We have a get on as a guest, the guy who owns what's left of Summer Wind.
Yeah, right? Or you know,
or is he just who own the blueprints to it?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got the blueprints, yeah.
And he owns a property, I think, too, doesn't he?
Yeah. I have to ask about that. But yeah, he wanted to come on the show and kind of talk about Summer Wind and the haunting and everything like that. So we're doing a revisit on that. Somebody mentioned Bill Cooper and some of like doomsday predictions stuff. So we were going to do a show about doomsday predictions in general.
We'll probably put Millerites in there too.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Okay. We wanted to do a show about that. Somebody wanted us to do a show about Anton LaVey.
Yeah, we'll do a whole Satanist show.
We'll do one of those. We're going to do a spontaneous combustion show.
Okay.
We're going to do a Norse mythology show.
Oh, that'd be good.
Somebody asked for the Wineville Chicken Coop Murders, like a true crime.
Never heard of that one.
Yeah, I hadn't either. So I'm going to have to like research that. We're going to do a show about that. We're going to do a Horrors of Mount Everest.
Okay, yeah.
Show. We got a request
for
that.
Dead bodies up on the mountain.
Yeah, we got a request to do weird genetic mutations.
Okay.
Which we can do that. Now, a friend of mine wanted me to do, like we did, we talked a little bit about Goatman on our cryptid show.
Okay.
And she was telling me that she's like, there are tons of different legends about different kinds of Goatman and stuff like that. She's like, I'd love it if you'd just do a whole show about different goat men goat and stuff. So we might do a show about that too.
Okay.
And we're going to do one on like ancient Egypt and like myths about ancient Egypt and stuff. Because it's similar to the Maya one, but we'll do an Egypt.
And we're probably going to do a Halloween special.
Yeah, we haven't decided what we're going to do for Halloween yet, but I want to do something kind of cool, like a Halloween special, because Halloween's my very favorite holiday.
So I guess that's better. Okay, if you're enjoying the show, please support the show on Patreon.
Yes, it's patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. Yeah, I'll put a link in the description.
We're creeping up. I think we're almost at, what, $40?
Yeah.
Something like that. Okay.
Well, 45? 45.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think we are.
We're shooting for $2,500. That's a lofty goal.
$1 million.
$1 million. If you got half of that, I'd be happy.
Well, yeah, that would be awesome. Okay. But yeah, so please support the show on Patreon. We also still have shirts available at zazzle.com/13oclock.
Yeah, we're going to start running shirt commercials because these shirts are awesome. You guys got to see them.
I know. I still got to make more. I know I say that every time, but
I'll do the voiceover for the shirt commercials.
And you'll do it all with
your, I'll do it all with
your announcer voice.
Yeah, do my announcer voice. And the new shirts from 13 o'clock.
Criswell predicts.
Yes. I predict the shirt will be worn.
And like I said, if you want to listen to the audio podcast, like I said, it's been moved. I'll put a link to the iTunes in the description and a link to the blog and everything like that. And I think that'll do it for episode 51 about voodoo and zombies and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. It's an okay subject. Not my favorite subject, but it was okay.
Well, you had a good time.
Yeah, it's all right.
Thanks. Thanks for your vote of confidence. He's so helpful. He is so helpful. You see what I have to deal with?
All right, I'm out of here.
All right. See you guys next Tuesday. Bye. How can I squeeze into your hypnotized?